Hello, 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 and welcome to the Laughing Plays podcast, where knowledge is king and lady luck is queen. My name is Doobie Jack Barry Mosley, and joining me today are Captain John, all the way from Tortuga.
Ahoy there, mates.
Rebecca Mosley from the great state of Texas.
Howdy.
And Fanboy from Anonymous.
Okay. I was ready to throw a nice quip about where I'm actually from, but no, I guess it's a secret. Shh. I'm from a DVC resort.
We'll get to that later. Thank you for joining us on the January 18th edition of the LPP.
Yeah, you know me.
866-7- Before we begin, I'd like to remind the folk that we can be reached at podcast@laughingplace.com or 866-789-408 or post a message on the laughingplace.com discussion boards. We've got a fantastic show for you today. We're going to talk about the financials coming out of Disney and the annual report. We're going to talk about Little Mermaid, which opened on Broadway. And then we're going to get to some reader mail, Captain's Challenge, Popcorn or Churro, Disney Myths. Wow, what fun is in store. Let's get started.
Yay.
Fanboy.
Yes.
Where are you going to be on March 6th?
Let me think. Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Can you spell it?
N-E-W space M-E-X-I-C-O.
Very good. And why are you going to be there?
Because it's the shareholder meeting. Woohoo, 2008. It's really great.
Let's celebrate.
Celebrate. 2008.
Don't take a left turn at Albuquerque.
I know. I feel like Bugs Bunny's going to pop up and be like, whoops, wrong shareholder meeting. I took a wrong turn. And then he'll go to AOL Time Warner's shareholder meeting and be very depressed.
And why did they pick Albuquerque this year?
Because, as everybody knows, it's the setting of High School Musical.
What time is it?
Which it wasn't filmed in Albuquerque. It was filmed in Salt Lake. But in order to get there from Orlando, you actually have to fly through Salt Lake. So we'll pick up Zach and Corbin on the way, and then we'll drop them off. And they'll be like, gee, I've never been here before.
Are we really flying through Salt Lake?
I think to go from Albuquerque to California, we need to go through Salt Lake.
Oh, that's just too funny. I'm excited that it looks like we're actually going to go. Because, see, usually I just stay home, I listen to it on the internet, and what happens is the most interesting parts, the parts where, like, last year, Randy Newman was performing songs of Frog Princess, right?
I thought you said the interesting parts.
No, what? Stop.
Don't.
But he performed songs from Frog Princess, and I think they had a new trailer. What was it, WALL-E that they...
WALL-E!
And those parts we get to hear really bad...
It looks so delicious.
Really bad covers of Disney classics on the internet, while the people at the show actually get... At the shareholder meeting actually get to see the fun.
And see Evelyn in person.
Oh, yeah. I've never done that either.
Mr. Iger.
Usually I'm just, you know, as soon as the information comes, I try and get back out to everybody as quickly as possible, posting it on Laughing Place Latest. I'm going to have to train somebody to do that while I'm gone. But it'll be fun to be there in person.
It's okay, Happy. You can sit back down. Down, boy.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, like, the energy. And so I guess it'll give me a different idea now when I come home and I'm doing it. Because I don't think I'll be going every year. But when I'm home, right, I'll be able to have a feeling of, okay, what's the dynamic of what it looks like? Because I have my own vision. Because I think I've been doing that for 5 years now, where I sit at home and blog it, in essence, for everybody.
I've gone every year except two. One, because I was snowed out. And last year because I had a work obligation. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, not for everybody, but it's an excuse to go to a city that you don't go to, because usually Disney has no connection to the cities that they're going to. Like, I got to go to Philadelphia. No other reason I'll be going to Albuquerque. So I get to check them out. But also you get to, you know, see what's going on. You get to see Bob Iger in person and Dick Cook in person. And not that these are celebrities, but to us they are.
I was going to say, to us they are.
Now, I've only been to one, which was in Philadelphia, and that was when they had the big thing with Roy Disney and everything. That's pretty much how they all are, with that kind of excitement and emotion and the...
Remember when Michael forgot about the vote?
Vote. Now, that was one of the more exciting ones, right? They're
high
not
energy.
Usually that.
Well, every year has been different. I mean, that one was really long, because I think they were trying to delay the announcement of the vote till after the news, the 5 o'clock news. Sometimes they have, back in the day... they would show a Disney, unreleased Disney film and have a lot of fun, and they would have shareholder cruises on the Seven Seas Lagoon. Those days are long gone. But they vary. Like the one I went to, and the one that was in Anaheim was fun. They showed, because it was all about Pixar integration, so John Lasseter came up and just started talking. about the relationship. And the one thing you got to see, we got to see parts of Ratatouille that hadn't, we got to see the trailer of Ratatouille before it was released. However, you got to see the dynamic between John Lasseter and Bob Iger, and you're not going to get that on a webcast. But the fact that, as you know, John Lasseter's getting off the stage, and he's kind of pointing to Bob Iger, going like, "He's the man." And you're like, well, okay, maybe it's not just, you know, there's something more there than we bought Pixar.
Now, I know you've had the opportunity to look at the annual report, which is also now available online with the
long and the short.
With the spectacular cast of High School Musical right there on the cover. Could there be any more obvious statement from Disney of how important High School Musical is than to put them on the cover of the annual report?
No, and I'm ashamed to say I never predicted that it would be High School Musical, because usually you kind of guess what is going to be on it. If we're opening up a new theme park, that's going to be on it. Last year there was The Year of a Million Dreams, and they had the black and white picture of Woody and the little boy, so it got an indoor sort of Pixar and The Year of a Million Dreams. And or if there's a big film, like Tarzan was something that was very important. So I kind of figured WALL-E as sort of this departure for Pixar and trying to get some leverage behind that. But when it was High School Musical, I said, duh, of course. But then, you know, it's not even just High School Musical. I mean, that's obviously a great franchise, but no one expects High School Musical to last 20, 30 years. And it'll come back again. There'll be a Disney merchandise event. But they Disney Channel. Who would have ever thought when Disney started their pay TV thing in 1983, they would be on the cover of the annual report for creating a franchise as opposed to just exploiting a franchise, or well, I guess a polite term would be leveraging a franchise. However, you know, and in many ways, Disney is becoming the Disney Channel to so many people because it is the only part of Disney that is in everyone's homes. With that and Radio Disney and all the other teen Disney product is what Disney people expect. That's why you go to the theme parks and didn't have a lot of that until Kim Possible just got into the theme park maybe a year ago. But the High School Musical pep rally, everyone's like, wow, it's such a success. And you're like, well, duh. You know, it's as much part of Disney for these kids as Cinderella, Belle, and Aurora.
I was going to say, if you're in the teen years and you go to a Disney theme park, I think you would be disappointed if that wasn't represented there. You would expect it. So I'm really glad to see it. And the way that the Disney Channel continues to keep High School Musical fresh is amazing. I mean, they've repackaged that thing, you know, 185 different ways, it seems. They've had pop-up versions, dance-along versions, sing-along versions, versions where they have in between the segments, they have interviews with the cast. On Friday, they're going to have... On Friday, they're combining their two hottest properties, Hannah Montana and High School Musical 2. So when you hear this, there'll be an ongoing, probably, on the Disney Channel. It's a Hannah Montana marathon. And Hannah Montana has Miley Cyrus, she has a cameo in High School Musical 2. So what they've done is they've combined those two, and they're having the marathon followed by the musical. And in between, during throughout the day, they're sprinkling the programming with music videos from around the world of the High School Musical 2 and High School Musical numbers. So because they've redone it in various languages and whatnot, and they're sharing that now with the U.S. audience. And so that's going to provide kind of a global feel to the whole High School Musical thing. So it's pretty cool.
And you know, you they've done have done a Latin American version, a Bollywood version for India. It's been a global franchise. And, you know, you're talking about emerging markets like India. Disney doesn't have a 75, 80-year history with those markets. This is Disney to them. No, the parents aren't thinking, oh, well, wow, this new Disney thing. That's as much as part of it as they're trying to introduce Mickey Mouse there through the Disney Channel now. That's why my friends Tigger and Pooh and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse are there, is so that they can get kids watching Playhouse Disney to embrace those core characters and still have quality programming. It's not a coincidence.
Looking through the annual report, what stuck out in your mind, fanboy?
I think the thing that's most interesting about the annual report this year is it's perhaps one of the least forward-looking annual reports I've seen. And it's because, first of all, the company doesn't have anything really they need to fix. So it's not like the famous Michael Eisner Autopia car. that when he would talk about how the, you know, the company's not running on all cylinders or we're trying to rev it up and get it there. Whereas there's nothing, there's no pressing urgency. I mean, the technology piece is still there and present. However, but you also got to look at the core businesses. Your studios and television are kind of in a bind with this writer strike. You know, they're not, they're trying to figure out what that's going to be, and you're not going to put that in your annual report because, quite frankly, when this was written, it was the writer strike was in its infancy, if that. And because usually he writes this letter in early November. Also, so that, and you have your theme parks, which are continuing the year of a million dreams. Now, we know behind the scenes there's probably a lot of work going on, especially as Pixar and the new WDI structure is trying to gain some traction. But it takes some time for those things to develop. So really the only thing that they have to talk about are new cruise ships, new DVC, and the Hawaii project, which we've already gotten. So, and then, you know, consumer products, video games is really big. However, what are you going to say except we're investing more in video games?
And looking at the annual report, I did notice there's a picture from The Princess and the Frog in it. Everyone get a chance to see that?
Yep.
Everyone look at your monitors.
It's very beautiful.
I'm holding it up.
You can shoot over to my desktop.
What do you guys think? Does this put any positive, negative, any thoughts in your mind? Taking a look.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it doesn't really show you too much, but it looks pretty. So I mean,
I like it. It's got a classic look.
It does. I think that's why they picked that picture. The, you know, Belle on the, and you could just see Belle and the Beast on this balcony.
Yeah, or
you know,
Quasimodo.
About to, or basically any, you know, Snow White, anybody that's ever been on a balcony. Hey, look, you can see the WD and the RD. but it's funny because I think this one's gotten a lot of buzz, and you look at, compare it to Bolt, which got a lot of negative buzz from just one picture. Mm-hmm. We don't even know how the characters move. She could start, like, South-parking, and her head could, like, jump up and down. We don't know what's going on, yet people take one picture and just...
Well, it speaks to you.
Yeah.
Because animation, I mean, in many ways, the Disney films are art in motion.
So. But, you know, they always tell us that it's all about the story. Who knows? Well, and, but we've had, because we've had plenty of pretty pictures that have not done well.
For me, I'm thinking Treasure Planet.
Treasure Planet, exactly.
It was stunning. The images I saw of Treasure Planet, it was absolutely stunning. And then I went to the film itself, and it left me kind of flat. I mean, I didn't dislike it as much as many others have, but it was just not quite as interesting.
Or Bust a Moo.
April 2.
You know what?
I will never forget that opening day, and that's the saddest thing in the world, that out of all the Disney films I know when they were released, Bust a Moo, April 2, Home on the Range.
Wow. Maybe April 2nd we should see it finally.
That's a good idea. Which year? Fanboy, one thing in my reading the annual report, I noticed they like to say the words Disney difference a lot.
Yeah, which I find funny, because to cast members, the Disney difference means their benefits. That's all. that's whenever are you talking to cast members, whenever they get like complimentary tickets or anything, it also, on the back, it always says the Disney difference. So whenever I read that, I keep thinking, so I'm going to get free tickets now or what?
That's funny.
But Bob is using it to talk about the Disney difference as being the brand, and he's being smart, and he's not saying Disney, you know, the strength of the Disney brand all the time, because I think, you know, to quote Roy Disney, you brand cows to tell them apart. So it's a way that you can say it without meaning it, and how there's the Disney brand, and more than just the title, but what it encompasses, its history, its heritage, its commitment to quality, the employees getting behind it, is what sets this company apart. And I think in many ways, Bob doesn't mention it, there's an ESPN difference too. I think the reason that's so successful is because they are, quote, the worldwide leader in sports, that they do take pride. I think there's people that work at ESPN just to work at ESPN. And I think, you know, they don't work for Fox Sports because they are the undisputed leader.
NSI.
Well, exactly. Which I think is part of the problem of ABC is I think they're trying to create a culture there, but it's not there yet, so there's no ABC difference. However, you know, you think about it, Ed Catmull and John Lasseter could have started their own company and been fine and successful. They had no need to get into the Disney fold to live a very rich life. But they did it because it's Disney, and they're able to take it further. And I think, especially in the case of John Lasseter and Ed Catmull, it means something to have your product in a theme park and be a part of the Disney family again. So they're able to bring really creative people in because it's Disney. And I think that's probably the strongest Disney difference. And so I agree with him 100%. But I'm the nomenclature's Nazis are going to get down on him, I think.
The interesting thing, tacking on with the Disney difference, Doobie and I had a meeting this week with a Disney cast member, longtime cast member, not in a theme park, in one of the other divisions of the company. And in talking with her, it was very clear what a pride and a love she has of Disney and what it means to her to work for Disney. And she shared a couple of stories of people and their difficulty in adjusting once they were no longer with Disney, whether it be, you know, for various reasons, people end up, you know, leaving companies, sometimes not of their wish. And, you know, it's amazing. Doobie and I were talking with her about a few people that we've known, and just there's something about people who are drawn to work for Disney in many cases we've encountered where that means so much to them. They can go be an artist someplace else, but there's a drive to be a Disney artist. They understand that special value, the specialness of the place. And it's tough when that's not available anymore or things change or whatnot. So it's interesting to see Iger using that type of imagery in his writing there, you know, that it's nice to see that he also, you know, shares that and not in the sterile branding way that Eisner typically used, which, I mean, I'm not trying to say that that's negative, except that I think as a shareholder, when you read one, it feels better.
It's interesting when Disney outsources, as outsourcing becomes more popular, you see people leaving their position. Instead of just going to work for the new company, easy transition, no big, they'll try and find another job at Disney just to be a part of Disney. You saw, I mean, it's huge exodus at Disney Store. I can't tell you how many people, merchandise people I bump into in the park, and they're like, yeah, I used to work at the Disney Store. They sold it. I moved down here. You know, and just because – it's not because of the theme park tickets. It's having Mickey Mouse on your paycheck.
Exactly.
There's something special about that. Even though they're still working at a Disney store, I can't imagine it was any worse run now than it was towards the end of Disney's run. So,
right.
Have you seen those children's play financials?
There's something about that blue card, as it were. You know, that's I think of it as, you know, getting that blue card, because most employee, you know, kind of salaried employees, they have that little blue card. And there's something about having that there is just a pride with it. And it's funny because living here in Orlando, you see a lot of people who forget to take off their name badges and their lanyards when they go to the store or the gas station on the way home. Because I guess technically, once you're off work, you know, you're supposed to – you can have your costume on. But I think Disney prefers that you take off the name badge and you take off the lanyard when you're off property.
Because then no one will know.
But you're allowed to wear the costume. That's not an issue. But it's funny to me. I can't think of any time I have seen another theme park employee accidentally wearing a badge or wearing their lanyard or whatever. I mean, I don't know if the rules are different and that's why, but it's just, I just have found it kind of a humorous thing that I'll stumble upon Disney cast members who've forgotten, but I haven't stumbled upon.
I was on the freeway the other day. I did notice someone, the guy next to me, he was all blue.
Oh, stop.
Abadi yabada.
Oh, we drove past speaking of driving past, we drove past a Walt Disney World, like semi trailer truck driving down the road.
Was it half a trailer?
Well, it wasn't like a full big rig. It wasn't a full big rig. It almost was like a flat. It was almost like, you know, okay, this is what I thought of, honestly. You remember that footage of the Pirates of the Caribbean being driven down the five in that truck?
Yeah.
Okay, it reminded me of that, only it was all enclosed instead of being, you know, open to the world. And so I'm envisioning.
So more like a moving van type vehicle.
But it was half height. Okay. It wasn't full height. And I'm just trying to think what fits in there,
You know what else I find funny, though, among when you're talking about cast members and their pride in the company? If you talk to cast members, I bet you cast members watch 80% more ABC than the general public. Because they're all like, yeah, Lost, that's ours. Grey's Anatomy, that's ours. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, it's not. There's no Disney brand to Grey's Anatomy, but they're I don't know if it's just because they see it on the internet every day, but they know what programs are theirs. And I think even Flashback, the cast member show one year at Disneyland, was themed around different ABC shows like General Hospital and such.
This just in. The Orlando Sentinel had an article on January 14th where they broke the news, and I don't know if any of you even had any clue this was going on, but apparently there's some construction going on next to the Contemporary Resort, and the Orlando Sentinel is saying maybe it's Disney Vacation Club related.
No.
Really?
Wow.
That's a secret.
I know that's shocking.
I'm...
Disney would not confirm it. In fact, I think their quote was something along the lines of, "We are not ready to announce anything today."
Tomorrow? Remember when they were announced the Tower of Terror after like it started vertical construction too at DCA? Like, we're not building anything, really.
And I think the speculation, or even perhaps the assumption, was they don't want to interfere with sales of Saratoga and Disney's Animal Kingdom, considering the wonderful location that this one has. And they figure once they do announce that and make sales available, that may cannibalize from the other, so that makes sense.
Remember when they had decided to have the What's Next media event at the Contemporary, and they've already started construction, and they made no mention of it? So, what, you know, this is all the construction we're doing, and I could just imagine one part, well, what's going on in the parking lot?
So, and speaking of new stuff, this week saw the premiere of what's it officially called, The Little Mermaid on Broadway?
I don't know. I call it Disney Theatricals' Little Mermaid.
I doubt that's the official name.
I know, but I call it Disney Theatricals' The Little Mermaid.
Tom Schumacher's The Little Mermaid?
Nope, Disney Theatricals.
I think it's just The Little Mermaid. On ice? No.
No.
The Little Mermaid. A new musical.
The Little Mermaid opened on Broadway this week.
Yes.
To much critical reaction, and Rebecca, with her normal job of having to scan the Disney news every day, was able to gauge some of that reaction, as well as watch some clips and listen to the virtual premiere. So why don't you give us your impressions, since we haven't seen it, of TLMOB.
Tlumba.
You know, it's all the lines have been a lot of puns that have been quite amusing for ragging on the show.
Yes, they have.
Yes, they have.
Flounders on stage or something like that.
Yeah, beached on the Great Wet Way in reference to Broadway.
Stick a dingle hopper in it, it's done.
Okay, now I have to admit I didn't see that headline. But it was really rough because I listened to the virtual premiere, and I thought, you know, what I heard I thought was very sweet. There was a new song called Positivity, which opened
the
second.
That's me, bye.
Okay. And it played up on the vaudevillian background of the actor who brought Scuttle to life, Buddy Hackett, and now oh, you guys are terrible. We will forever remember Buddy Hackett for the impression he did of Scuttle at the El Capitan Theater, which the two guys here were trying very hard to share with you and failed miserably.
It wasn't for Herbie, I can tell you that.
I thought that the Positivity song was very cute. It's kind of a tap dance song and dance kind of number done by the seagulls as Ariel gets her legs. That's one of the new ones, and it's just trying to she wants to give up too quickly on using these new things, and they're, you know, helping her out. And I enjoyed that one. And then there's another one that's kind of a doo-wop type number done by the Mer sisters. And it's about Ariel being in love, and their obvious concern that she's kind of lovesick. And I thought those were both sweet, but apparently I was almost alone, it seems. As I read, I wasn't there for the performances, but based on the music I heard, I was excited. I thought, oh, well, it sounds like, you know, they've done a good job. But the reviews I read, and then I talked to a couple people who went to the premiere, and everything I got back was just so disappointed and so negative. It was kind of rough.
It was.
You know, I think it all starts when you see somebody with a tail sticking out of their back and having. It was very weird.
Well, I have to admit, the next day when I watched footage on Good Morning America, which you can still view online if you go to the Good Morning America website. Actually, if you go to Laughing Place, we have the Little Mermaid headlines all gathered up together in one place, and you can click through the various reviews and also the video that's up. But when I saw the footage on Good Morning America, I thought, ooh, the sets were just a little out there for me, and the costuming I wasn't that keen on. And the Heelys, which they used, I thought that it would provide greater variety with the choreography because they wouldn't be in rollerblades. so they'd be able to walk and glide. But I don't know. I didn't feel like it really took advantage of the opportunities that were available with that, you know, the fact of the Heely versus the rollerblade. But I don't know. I was excited, though, to see that Time Magazine, he apparently really liked it.
Mr. Time?
And I forget the reviewer's name, to be honest. And he was
Man
going...
Man of the Year, Little Mermaid.
He was going on about, you know, how he almost felt like he needed to defend it against the other critics, how they just, you know, don't really understand the Disney brand, you know, the Disney musical or whatnot, you know. And he was really raving about it. And then he went on to talk about how kind of the performance of Sebastian the Frog didn't really measure
Sebastian
up.
Sebastian the Frog?
Yeah. Didn't really measure up to the film.
You can see the challenge.
And so I was a little concerned and disappointed that the one review I read that really seemed to be glowing about the musical was unclear as to what type of creature Sebastian was.
I hear he's really looking forward to The Princess and the Crab.
Yeah. Thank you for stealing my...
So, yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't appear that the critics have liked The Little Mermaid. However, based on the reviews I saw, I got the impression that families might really enjoy it. That while it may not have appealed to the Broadway critic, it may build momentum among people who want to take their children to see a Broadway musical.
Momentum.
And it has the beauty that little girls would want to see. So, I mean, not being a kid, I can't really speak to that. And I haven't spoken to anyone who's taken a child yet. So we'll see how once, you know, the families are going. I mean, it pulled in a lot of money in its early performances in Denver. And
it's hard
and
to get
whatnot,
a fast pass for it, too.
I wonder if it's cannibalizing.
Oh wait, wrong show.
I wonder if it's cannibalizing audience from Voyage of the Little Mermaid at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, because that Beauty and the Beast show. Once that show started on Broadway, nobody went to see that. That show just died right away.
Yeah,
we should be so lucky.
I was gonna say, isn't it still playing?
Play till the day I die. Till they announce the contemporary.
All right, let's get to some reader mail here, people. We have a question that we received from one Emergency Incas. What do you think that means?
I don't know, but I like it. It's cool.
It's really cool. I think
it makes me think about Star Galactica.
I always get them confused.
Because, as we know, society here really began out there.
I think next to Naff Walter, this is my favorite name. Anyway, listening to the podcast, I noticed that my taste in Disney stuff seemed to be a bit on the quirky side.
Well, join the club.
Therefore, I pose a question in the spirit of that, quote, things you think aren't that hot, quote, question from a while back. I wonder, what do you like that nobody else seems to notice?
Gummy bears.
My reply would be gummy bears.
Here and there and everywhere.
Yeah, it's no great treasure of storytelling, but compared to everything else that was on TV in the mid-80s, it's a surprising quality. It also paved the way for later, possibly greater things on the Disney afternoon. I know I'm leaving Wuzzles out here, but it didn't seem to have that fun and adventure format of the later shows.
Oh, no. Wuzzles were awesome.
Also, I'm just a sucker for interesting fantasy worlds. Disney took a cutesy animal cartoon and made it something infinitely richer than the cheerful dreck of Care Bears or whatever the heck it
was, Paul.
My Little Pony did.
Hey.
Ooh. Oh, and Quick Cars would have made an awesome park ride. Second would be Gargoyles. That show did have a solid storytelling and, again, an interesting fantasy setting. I do wish Disney would release the rest of the second season on DVD. It wouldn't even have to be a nice box with bonus features. One of those no-frills DA box sets would make me happy.
DA?
Disney Afternoon.
Gotcha.
District Attorney.
Boom, I was going to say, is he shaggy?
All right, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Things I like that aren't hot. I know typically I talk about the 70s Mickey Mouse Club, but this time I'm going to talk about something different.
The Rescuers.
Nope. Oh. I'm going to talk about the Disney novelty album. You know, things like Mousercise.
Come on, everybody, let's Mousercise.
And
the Princesses.
Mickey Mouse Disco.
Living La Vida Mickey.
Living La Vida Mickey.
My
house
makes you take your shoes off and go dancing in the rain.
Disney's Beach Party. Totally Minnie. You know, these really random. I enjoy them more when they actually feature the characters singing odd songs. I enjoy those. But I also like the ones where it's just odd songs about Disney, like Mickey's Dance Party. There's one called Rap-A-Magical, and it is the most bizarre little story about, I'm not even really sure what, but I get a kick out of it. It's part of my workout rotation, actually, along with a couple other of the classic Disney novelty album songs, like You Can Always Be Number One and Splash Dance Since I'm Swimming.
Splash Dance, Splash Dance, Splash Dance.
No, that's Dex Dance. Nice try, though.
Splash, splash, splash.
Everybody.
Happy birthday.
That's on that album.
I know.
Yeah. And that was the one that launched You Can Always Be Number One, which was the sports Goofy anthem that we all saw on the Disney Channel way too much.
Yep.
Okay, Captain, what is it that you like that others don't? And you can't say Pirates, because everybody loves Pirates except us.
Not everybody.
I beg to differ.
And see, that would be the other category, things that are good but we hate. I think that would be in your category.
I want to be Pirates.
I like the ride. I'm not crazy like Doobie, but that movie, woo, 10 years.
We've been anyway. Rusting.
Needing so much more than dust.
All right, all right. Let's play nice here. Don't make me pull out my Cutlass.
Your Oldsmobile?
That's good. Someone saw Cars.
Pachuca. Anyway.
See, there's two things, because House and Mouse, nobody seemed to really like it that much as a cartoon. But I liked House of Mouse because it had a lot of random characters in it.
Soup and salad, fries and biscuits, extra olives, donuts.
See, that would be one of those novelty songs that I love.
But I think I'll just have to go with, like, all the 70s live-action Disney movies.
Really?
Dexter Riley movies.
I'm okay with Dexter Riley. When you start getting into Million Dollar Duck territory.
Hey, I saw Million Dollar Duck, and you're right.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm not saying that they're like.
Where else could you get such dramatic acting as when Dean Jones is standing out there?
Take
my hand. My father used to say that to us all the time.
No, put your hand in mine.
Oh yeah, put your hand in mine. Yes, we heard this from my father all the time for random reasons. I don't know.
I'm not saying I like it for the right reasons. I just like them a whole lot more than other people. Like some people, like you just can't even mention it, and people just like shudder at the thought of it. But no, I could actually watch them and get something out of it.
Fanboy?
I'm going to have to say, now, it's not necessarily not liked by everyone, mm-hmm. but when you're in the Disney fan community, the whole Disney Channel thing, like, you're like, yeah, I watch Disney Channel. And they're like, why? It's not like it used to be when they used to have old people talking. That's okay. Kim Possible's still good. And I'm not saying I don't like the old Disney Channel, but I can like two things. And, you know, while I like Walt Disney, I would wish I could see Walt Disney. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I also understand that.
Fess up. If they had a choice of Kim Possible or Zorro, which would you be
Kim Possible.
Around?
No. That was the problem with Walt Disney. They would start off with Walt Disney Presents. Everybody likes that. Then they go, out in the night, click. Well, actually, you like the song, so you go through the whole song. Zorro!
Click. Okay. I'll add it to my list. I like Zorro, and nobody
really?
Else seems to like it either.
No, it's very popular, except with me and Fanboy.
It's a nice place to park.
Oh, you know what, though? With Zorro, I used to watch long enough to see if it was the Annette Funicello episode.
I am a big fan of Zocalo, though.
Oh, you gotta eat.
No connection between that and...
None whatsoever.
Okay, how about you, Doobie?
Well, my first thought was Paul Pressler.
What?!
That's a joke. No one likes him.
These are the jokes here, people.
So I hope Mrs. Pressler likes him. Or do you think, like, when Mrs. Pressler and Mr. Pressler are, like, hanging out, she goes, you're so cheap.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm sure they have a wonderful home life. I'm sure he's quite a wonderful person. Our problem with him is strictly his job ability, not his person.
I understand, but, you know, you are your job. Or
no.
Is that just me?
That's just your issue,
and that's why there is no Mrs. Fanboy.
That didn't even make any sense in English. You are what your job?
You are defined by your job, I guess I should say.
No. Only you.
You are what your job.
Anyway, my real answer is, I had a hard time with this one, because my tastes are middle of the road. What everyone likes, I like. What everyone doesn't, I
yo
doesn't.
Yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
But ultimately, I think... the wonderful song from Return to Neverland, I'll Try.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
Maybe.
I'll try and try and try and try.
Mate, and I see you're singing the novelty album version, which is terrible. I'm talking about the one from this movie. Maybe the best Disney song of all time.
And emphasis on no.
So
I'll try not to listen to this song.
Not if you're listening to LP Radio, I make sure it's on every single day.
Dude, that's why we have 5 listeners.
That's why I do not listen to Laughing Place Radio.
Whenever DB is listening to Laughing Place Radio, he puts that in the queue.
Yeah, I manipulate the queue so that I get it here.
At least you got rid of yo, I did. Pirate Cypher. I don't end it like that.
Those are no longer hot songs. All right.
I need to get some more new songs.
I should add another one to my list on the subject of pirates. Treasure Planet is something that seems everybody hates, but I thought was quite enjoyable.
I was just thinking about watching that the other day. I was flipping through the DVDs.
And then you realized it was Atlantis, and you kind of started confused.
Like, oh, I kind of want to watch that again.
It could have used without the robot. But, you know.
Long John Silver?
No, Ben.
Long
John Silver is, you know, half and half.
Oh, okay.
And they even use computers to create the model for him.
Yeah.
With Valentine's Day not too far away, about a month, last week we were talking about romantic stuff like proposals.
Ew.
Utah Josh had just gotten proposed. Oh, I'm sorry. He had not gotten proposed. He apparently proposed.
Not sure what that means.
he proposed at Disneyland over the New Year's Day period.
I'll read some of what he wrote about his proposal.
Okay.
I had made arrangements with my friend who works at Disneyland. After a crazy fun New Year's Eve celebration at Disneyland, Libby, his girlfriend, had to tell several friends that she didn't get a ring that night.
Aww.
Her little brother and others had hoped for a romantic midnight proposal in front of a fantasy castle under a fireworks-filled sky, but it was not to be.
Dun, dun, dun.
By the way, the fireworks were canceled the New Year's Eve anyway, so.
Dude, and New Year's Eve, not very romantic.
At Disneyland. On New Year's Day at 5:15, we went to the Golden Horseshoe to see our stage right booth seat reserved for us. Billy Hill and the Hillbillies came out strumming their guitar, mandolin, bass, and fiddle, and we settled in for a great show. After the first song, however, the main Billy, whose name I believe is Billy, looked over the audience and said, Josh, where are you? I said, I'm here. And he replied, so how's it going?
And then Billy's proposed to Josh. The end.
Josh continues, my heart was pounding, and I mumbled something about Disneyland. Billy said, Josh is here with his girlfriend and has a question for her. He then handed me the microphone. The rest, as they say, is history.
Now, we've seen the video.
Yes, Josh put the video up on his website, which, if I were smarter, I would have put here on the article.
We can put the link on the podcast page.
It's on the website. It's on the discussion boards under this topic as well.
Okay.
But,
It was cool. The crowd went wild.
That was
so cool. They shoved the table out of the way that's up there at the booth, and he got down on one knee, and it was so cute. It was awesome.
So we were kind of surprised and a little bit thrilled at all the responses we got on how you proposed to your...
So many different places.
Yeah, at Disney. So we're going to go through them because they're just so romantic, and Valentine's Day is less than a month away. So hurry up, guys.
Let's see. S.D.I. John.
You think that's how it's pronounced?
That's what I'm going with.
I'm saying S-Dijon.
Oh, okay. He decided that they should take the plunge on Splash Mountain. So as they took the plunge, he asked her to marry him. And I joke that I guess everything goes uphill from there. So that's so cool. And he asked just as they hit the top of the mountain, popped the question. They bought the picture. It sits on the mantelpiece. That's so cool.
That's interesting.
That's fun. I don't know that I could have focused long enough to. I would have been like freaked out about the drop.
I'm like you finally get engaged and then you plunge down into a briar patch because that's the last thing you want to happen is to be thrown into a briar patch.
Right.
what?
No, that's the whole point of this. Never mind.
It's the point.
Seen the movie?
It's the point of the story.
Yeah. But did we mention Splash Mountain? We talked about. What rides do you get proposed on?
Oh, you mean did you mock people who get
engaged? What we said last episode.
Oh, I don't know. You were mocking various locations as unengageable, and I said that you can get engaged anywhere. You people are
and proof that you can get engaged anywhere is Mike, who proposed to his wife in the front driver cabin of the monorail between the TTC and Epcot.
Oh, dude. Proposing the one that goes from the TGC to the Magic Kingdom.
No.
Epcot one. So, no, kidding.
Epcot one is so pretty. Plus, you have a lot of time.
Apparently, he's been married a while because he did the one from TTC to Epcot Center. Congratulations, guys.
That's cute.
Actually, my real favorite one, though, was Schnebs.
Aww.
It's sweet.
Schnebs proposed to, as he puts, my beloved Blondie at the Compass Rose in front of the Sleeping Beauty Castle.
What's it say on that thing? Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. Thanks, Doug.
He pulled out the engagement ring, got down on one knee in the middle of the Compass Rose, and asked her to marry him. After she said yes, a friend pulled out the bridal mouse ears and placed them on Blondie's head while he put the ring on her finger, and guests gathered around applauded. That's sweet.
Now, that's sweet enough, but my favorite part is the follow-up he gave, where he says, "Ever since then, every time I visit the park, I make sure to step right on the middle of the compass rose, which can be a pretty good trick with all the people who congregate there. I do it to refresh my luck, since I consider the day Blondie said she'd marry me to be the luckiest day of my life."
Aww. That's so sweet.
Jeff Peterson says he proposed to his wife at approximately 7:45 on July 16th, 1989.
Did her things get caught in the pavement, because I heard they were still in?
They had just finished riding Splash Mountain for the first time. It opened officially the next day. And then on the Disneyland Railroad, somewhere between the Rivers of America and It's a Small World, before they discovered Mickey's Toontown, he asked her to consider marrying him. Is that how you want to be asked, honey? Would you consider marrying me?
I'd snicker at you.
He does admit the proposal was rather vague.
Mm-hmm. So. Hey, it worked for him.
Did she say yeah? Yeah. Later on he talks about actually getting married. So
their wedding day was 4 months later.
Gotcha.
That was very cool.
What's the last one we want to share today?
Last one is from Donnie AZ.
That's better than I was pronouncing it.
Donyaz?
You got it.
I figure it's Donnie in Arizona, but I could be wrong.
I think you're right.
You going to the meeting? Just to state away.
Oh, that's cool. Let's see. He was proposing to his girlfriend, and he didn't want her to know about it. So he had been using this phrase of, we're getting married, so we don't have to get engaged, to put her off the trail. And he had a trip planned to Disneyland, and he had called ahead and talked to a cast member there and asked her about, you know, special ways to propose at Disneyland. And she said, yeah, and, you know, show up and ask for her when they get there, and she'd help him out. Well, unfortunately, when it got to Disneyland, apparently she wasn't on duty yet, and none of the other cast members there knew about the plans. So they offered some of the, you know, typical bland ideas that they would have available to them, not knowing, you know, the nature of the conversation he'd had with the other cast member. Well, later that day, he was able to sneak back from that family to town hall, and he was city hall. So he was able to sneak back to city hall, and the cast member was there, but unfortunately, his wife-to-be started walking up as he was in conversation with them, and he quickly changed the conversation, but the cast member caught on as he introduced her as his wife-to-be, so realized that they needed to, you know, not talk about it. Well, he was able to surprise her by telling them that they had arranged a special tour of the castle and that security was going to escort them. And he was able to sneak a camera over to a cast member, and they went out on the bridge, and he got on one knee and asked the kids if we could be a family and if he could marry Wendy with them, saying yes. And then he asked Wendy if she would be his wife. And her tears and smile let me know she had no idea about my plans to get engaged at Disneyland. And after our kiss, the crowd went wild. And he quickly apologized to the single men for making them look bad and enjoyed a fireworks show there at the castle with his new and confirmed fiancé and soon-to-be family. That's sweet. That's very cool.
Donnie and Wendy. So all you couples out there listening to the Laughing Place podcast, with just a couple of weeks to go till Valentine's Day, you got a lot to live up to.
You know what? It made me start thinking about the various Disney touches to weddings we've seen. From the Tiki Room chant at one wedding being, I think, the couple's first dance, to our own wedding that had the glass slipper on it. My little brother carried our wedding rings in a glass slipper on a pillow. Because Cinderella, being my favorite fairy
tale. Those aren't pillows.
Oh, stop. They were too.
And those, and then he tripped and broke the glass. It was bad.
No,
and then you
didn't.
Had another one.
Yeah. My favorite Disney touch is a reception we went to where there was plush on each of the tables.
Yes.
And ours was the two vultures from...
Oh, that's right.
From
Splash Mountain.
Splash Mountain.
Oh,
because of the Laughing Place.
Gotcha. I thought they were your friends.
No.
They're your friends.
Yeah,
your friends to
the
bitter end. The bitter end.
That song is the antithesis. If I'll Try is on one end of the spectrum, that song is all the way on the other.
But they didn't put those out, remember?
Oh, they didn't?
They gave them to us later because they were worried that we might not take too kindly to two vultures being sit on our table, but we busted up when they brought them over
that
to us.
That was awesome.
And then Stanley Gold and Mike Ovitz.
We still have them. Oh, in fact, it's sitting over there on your desk.
They're my inspiration.
It's awesome.
They're the reason, they're the meaning in my life. Captain, what you got?
What will you do with a drunken sailor? What will you do with a sailor? What will you
not
do?
Not sing along. It's
make
a
room
captain.
For the captain.
Excuse me.
Clear the deck.
Who woke up the Glee Cub?
I think somebody left the shower ready.
I wish you would sing solo.
See,
so
no,
we can't hear you.
My voice may not be so marvelous, but my profile is out of this world.
Yeah, bull. Anyway.
The trouble is, it's not far enough out of this world. Well, you see.
Oh, Schmidt has no hair.
I have a question. If you understand that joke about Schmidt having no hair,
I explained
can you please
it to
email?
You.
I don't get it.
Well, just because you don't get it.
Air Schmidt.
Right?
Air. It's Mr.
Yeah, I understand.
And
I see
it's a pun.
Oh, so it's not funny.
It's a pun.
Oh.
No, it's funny.
No, it's not.
If you don't find fun, never mind.
If you don't find
don't find puns funny.
I do find puns funny, just not that one.
All right, well, then that's your failing.
Yeah, well. Although they do that magic trick at the
end. Take it up with Wally Bogue next time you see him.
I believe before you were so rudely interrupted by Tom Jones over there, you were about to
not unusual.
What else is new? What else is new? Anyway, last episode I asked.
Not DVC units. Sorry, continue.
You can mute him.
Last episode I asked, Captain Hook, which hook does he have the hand on?
Gauche.
What?
Left.
You are correct. And so is.
Foley artist Rebecca?
Dio Theo was first, and let's see, Christy Marsh was going to guess right, you know, just in case, you know, who was wrong, but then she realized that Wendy actually has a line that mentions that.
Read on towards the, let me see that.
What, read on towards the bottom about how the hooks change between different versions of the character?
Yeah. They talked about...
I need like a hurricane lamp so I can make the growling noise.
Someone went to Monster Sound Show.
They talked about the version of Hook with Dustin Hoffman and how they looked back at pictures at it, and one had it on the left hand and one had it on the right hand. I think that's funny.
Wait, in the same film?
Yeah.
No, Hook 2.
No, I mean picture, not necessarily in the film, but pictures from
stills.
The film.
They may have published the stills backwards.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
They may have reversed one.
Okay.
Because you can do that, because the H on his chest looks the same either way.
Oh, because... well, I mean, it could have been in the movie how it was a continuity error, maybe. You know, just like the makeup department messed up and put his hook on the wrong hand.
That would be major.
That's like...
In the recent one with Jason Isaacs, it's right-handed, too. So, anyway. We were talking about The Little Mermaid, and so I figured I'd ask the panel here.
We got a question?
Hands on the buzzers. This should be pretty simple for you to answer.
Okay.
Me.
All right. Who plays Sebastian?
Doobie.
Some
guy from the Bahamas.
Wait, are we talking in the movie?
We're talking about
the
movie.
Oh, Samuel E. Wright.
Oh, man. Fanboy got it.
Whoopee!
All right. So now for all those listening at home, in the comfort of their own homes away from Fanboy... Where it's safe.
Which is very comfortable.
Yes. I have to sit right next to him. So, you know, I'm in the line of fire all the time.
Although Submarine Maniac apparently listens to us in the projection booth at work.
Projection booth?
Yeah, very cool.
So, theater?
Can you give me an early screening to Cloverfield?
By the time he hears this, it'll be out.
Ooh, when are you going to go see Cloverfield?
Saturday night.
Oh, cool. Well, not me.
S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y.
That's right.
Okay, so what's the question for the gang out there?
For the gang out there, it is how many Academy Awards did The Little Mermaid, the movie, win?
Wow.
Excuse me? As opposed to the animated series or the musical?
Hey, you asked earlier. I'm just clarifying. I'm clarifying for you.
Thank you, Captain, for your clarity and conciseness and for putting up with the guy across from me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome, sir.
Rebecca?
Yes, Doobie?
What's next on the agenda?
I thought you know.
Oh, that's right. It's my favorite part of the show. It's my favorite part of the show. It's my favorite part of the show. Popcorn at your row. That was painful.
That's like being on Stitch. Sorry.
That's my mother-in-law.
So, Reader Jeffrey asks, do we prefer classic dark rides like Snow White or modern dark rides like Monsters, Inc.?
I'm going to go with modern dark rides, because if you go on a classic dark ride that hasn't been updated to a modern dark ride, you realize how bad classic dark rides are. For example, we all talked last week about how Peter Pan is better at Disneyland because they updated in 1983. Go on the original Peter Pan, not so hot.
If that's your distinction between classic and modern, like the 1983 Fantasyland rides are modern, mm-hmm. then without a question, modern. However, if you consider those classic and then ones like Pooh and such more modern, which is what my initial thought was, then I'm going to go with the classic.
I dare to say this in front of you, Doobie, but what about a Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean?
Are we going to have to define dark ride again? Is there a bar down the middle of the Haunted Mansion?
No, that's not how you define dark ride. There's not a bar down the middle of Monsters Incorporated.
But it's in a car. It's not an Omnimover.
So dark rides are dark rides that are not Omnimovers.
It's like obscenity. Is that the right word?
Pornography? I'm pretty sure obscenity is defined.
No, it's obscenity.
No, pornography, you know it when you see it? You don't see profanity.
I didn't say profanity, I said obscenity.
Oh, obscenity. No, it's pornography.
No, it's obscenity.
Wikipedia.
I'm sure I'm right. It's like that other thing. I know it when I see it. You give me an attraction, and I will instantly tell you if it's a dark ride or not. And from that, you can build a definition.
Season Nemo and Friends.
Not a dark ride.
Okay, but see now...
Animal Kingdom.
What?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Not a zoo.
But you see, I think the question is really not counting Omnimovers, I think.
No, he's considering dark rides by the proper definition, mine.
See, as Fanboy said, you know, the modern it's a fine line between the modern ones and the classic ones, because the classic ones, are you counting the classic ones that have changed, or are you just counting, like, newfangled?
Like, the distinction between, I'd say the classic ones stopped in 1984 with the opening of Alice in Wonderland at Disneyland, the new Alice in Wonderland.
Because I define the modern era as Michael Eisner and beyond.
And
that's fine.
And you know what? Thinking of modern dark rides, I think of Winnie the Pooh in California, which is horrible, and Superstar Limo in DCA, which is horrible. So I'll go with...
Well, you know, Winnie the Pooh here was not made 40 years before the one in California, so you really got to throw that one in. Have you done Mike and Sully to the Rescue?
Yeah. It's a very, you know, static, and I think the other ones have the older ones have a bit more character to it.
That's a good answer. We don't need to argue everything, Fanboy. Well, you are a pill today, aren't you? Rebecca?
A pill of magic.
I think I'd go with classic. Not sure why.
Good answer. What's next?
Good answer.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Big money. Big money.
No Emmys. Wrong game show.
Okay.
Survey says.
So we had some really good food this week. We ate at Citrico's.
That was some good food.
I suspect we may talk about it later, but I don't know.
Do they allow 10-year-olds in that place?
Or yes,
do
they
have to,
yes,
because
they do.
Next door is Victoria and Albert's, and they've got to go somewhere.
In fact, we had a delightful little, I don't know, 7-year-old beside us, maybe? Nah, younger than
7
that.
7 if she was like
yeah,
a dog.
Yeah, no, sorry, yeah. She must have been like 4 or 5. Yeah.
Dog
no,
ears, please. Go with
dog ears,
her.
Dog ears. She's very sweet, though, well-behaved. She's very cute. Yeah. So my question to you, after, you know, we enjoyed our Citrico's meal, was... when we go back again, would you order the banana tort or would you order the
lemon cheesecake? Only because I had the lemon cheesecake would I try the banana tort.
The banana tort had bananas and vanilla and chocolate.
Hot chocolate.
It was a hot chocolate with a vanilla ice cream.
Tort is just fun to say, so...
I'm a big fan of tort reform. Sorry. I'm going to go with the lemon cheesecake because the banana chocolate tort was a little too chocolatey. Actually, when I say a little, I mean a lot too chocolatey.
Oh, really?
Yes, very chocolatey. Although the banana and the ice cream on the side was very good, I would probably go with the lemon cheesecake, and perhaps they would give me some ice cream on the side.
I was very jealous because I had the tiramisu, and it was tasty. I wanted to try the lemon cheesecake more.
I took
a bite of yours and I wanted more.
My cheesecake was awesome. I tried your tort. I tried your tiramisu and it was good, but wow, it was difficult to eat. It was very sweet and rich. And
exactly. I didn't even eat all of it.
You guys were raving. Not that my food wasn't good. It was fantastic.
Oh,
the salad.
Oh, man. I have never had such a good salad. I was just thinking about it today. It had a zesty... citrus. It was what, right? It had a citrus vinaigrette. Yeah, because it was a...
I had citricas.
It was a Chardonnay. Was it a Chardonnay? It was a Riesling, I think. I don't know. It was a white wine vinaigrette. It was a very, very, very lovely white wine vinaigrette on romaine lettuce with hearts of palm and crumbled blue cheese. Very, very simple, but the tartness of the vinaigrette with the richness of the blue cheese was fantastic.
The tartness of the vinaigrette.
I loved it.
You know who made it?
I hope it wasn't Remy.
Do you have any more? If not, I got one.
Go ahead.
Figaro or Dinah?
I like Dinah.
Figaro,
really?
Actually in the movie longer than like 2.4 seconds. And cats and rabbits, who cares?
No, but wasn't Figaro in a couple of Minnie Mouse cartoons?
Yes.
For random reasons?
Yes, I would go with Figaro. How about you, Dewey?
I would go with Dinah. I really like the name Dinah.
I like Dinah because it seems like Dinah is perfectly aware that Alice is kind of weird. So, you know, you kind of feel sorry for Dinah a bit, having to put up with Alice. And
she overlooks each and every podcast.
Yeah, she's right behind us.
That's what gave me the idea. What's the name of that rabbit, the white one?
The white rabbit. I keep asking, but he's always late.
And the bread and butterflies are kissing the tulips.
Well, I believe it's time for Fanboys Disney Myth.
Wow, I'm moving up in the world.
To the east side, baby.
Is that ABC?
I have no idea.
That feels like
a CBS show.
Really? Because I'm trying to remember when I'm on Commissary Lane if they play that song.
All right, before we get to this week's Disney myth, I think we need to put out there a couple of corrections.
Yeah.
Ooh, what's happening now?
First of all...
No, it was Jefferson's, not what's happening now.
First of all, Jeff Peterson was kind enough to write that, I guess a couple weeks ago you were talking about the whole Disney Legend program and Fred McMurray. And he goes, as Fanboy explained, Fred McMurray was chosen as the first recipient of this honor by management of the Disney Channel, and the program did not really get going until 1989, when the next 10 recipients were selected, namely of iWorks and Walt Disney's Nine Old Men.
Good choice.
However, it should be said that Fred Murray would not have been a bad choice for an early Disney Legend Award because of his numerous Disney contributions, including The Shaggy Dog, The Absent-Minded Professor, 7 films in all for the company.
True, but the first...
That's not the correction part, so It doesn't even matter. Fanboy said that none of Fred McMurray's sons, quote, ever worked for Disney. You could not be more wrong.
Yes, I could have. 3 of them could have been.
2 of them actually did, and 1 of them is even a Disney legend himself. Tim Considine played Stephen Douglas' son on My 3 Sons for 5 years, and then appeared on Spin and Marty and Hardy Boys. Before that, he appeared on Spin and Marty and the Hardy Boys serials on the Mickey Mouse Club. And he also had a role in The Shaggy Dog in 1959, and he was named the Disney legend in 2006. And McMurray's son, Don Grady, was on the Mickey Mouse Club during its 3rd season using his real name, Don Agrati.
I apologize. To be honest, I've never seen more of My 3 Sons than wow, 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 wow.
Click.
Yeah.
One more correction from the same myth. Fanboy mentioned Leonard Goldstein. He believed you were referring to Leonard Goldenson. Is he correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
That's why I do no research.
Another correction, which did not come from a reader but came from my own ears this week when I was talking to a cast member, and she casually mentioned that she was talking to a friend about being down in the Utilidors.
Okay. Here's the way the Utilidor thing works, and I think you all have to agree with me on this. If you're a Disney freak who starts working for Disney and you call it the Utilidor, you're just calling it because you're a Disney freak and you want to be a Disney freak. No one actually calls it the Utilidor who... doesn't have any prior prejudice to calling it the Utilidor. I'm standing by.
further research must be conducted.
All that said, all the corrections in, what myth do you have for us this week?
Something that I hear people say a lot, you Disney fans probably don't, but it is a myth out there, is that every attraction has a hidden Mickey. That is not true. Well, I should put a caveat. Not all of them have an official hidden Mickey. The more I learn about WDI, Walt Disney Imagineering, the more I realize they don't like hidden Mickeys. In fact, the one in the ballroom at the Haunted Mansion is probably one of the most famous hidden Mickeys of all time. Imagineering will keep going and moving the plate so that it's not a hidden Mickey. And so while there is that book that's a hidden Mickey, people tend to find, you know, you see three circles that are kind of, if you kind of bend your head, and it's a hidden Mickey. Hidden Mickeys are not a required mandate to be in every single Disney attraction. In fact, most of the time, they're just the painter, whoever's ever painting or what have you, got bored and finally just made three circles to amuse themselves.
So can you give us examples of, you know, more non-hidden Mickeys?
Well, I know that at the Seas of Nemo and Friends, they say that there's hidden Mickeys. There's no official hidden Mickeys in that. There's no official hidden Mickeys in the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, but people seem to find them anyway.
But there's such a thing as an official hidden Mickey in this game?
No, there's no such thing as an official hidden Mickey at all. But in terms of a Mickey that it was designed by Imagineering to be put in there, I'm trying to think of what there would be. Like the one that's the light in Splash Mountain, I think is actually intended to be there. However,
what about the captain's hat in Pirates? That's gone now, I think.
Yes, they've changed that with the lighting.
Ironically, one that was designed was, if you looked at the Disney MGM Studios from the sky, he got like a growth called Sunset Boulevard, and then the hat came, and it was.
So they acknowledge that hidden Mickeys exist, but they just aren't as officially mandated as some have heard over the years. It's not, oh, you must include a Mickey.
And from what Fanboy says, they're just as often done by, you know, Joe Blow Painter, who's putting his mark on things in the big concept from WDI on high.
Well, some Haunted Mansion cast members were telling us about, you know, rearranging plates after the recent refurbishment. They, you know, made sure that the hidden Mickey plate was back there. It wasn't there, you know, when they first received it back. So.
And whenever Imagineering does a walk through that attraction, they move the plate back. Then cast member does opening procedures and moves the plate.
I'm just glad Imagineering I'm just glad Imagineering doesn't take out the ring.
Please. Oh, that's a whole other story.
That's a Disney. That is next week's Disney myth.
Well, you see, though, with Expedition Everest, the Yeti was originally wearing a Mickey Mouse hat because, you know, you go so fast by him that nobody would ever notice.
There is a hidden Mickey in Jurassic Park, the ride.
Yeah, that's not very hidden.
And the Mickey ears on the skeletons in
Indiana Jones.
That's gone.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Well, that would explain why I couldn't find it the last time I went through. I was looking. I was like, oh, I wonder if they're still there. And I didn't see them. I thought I just missed them. But, okay.
So there's an answer to that.
Podcast@laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Before we close this. Hey, I said that without looking. Wow.
Next, we're going to take off the training wheels.
Stop the presses!
Dun, 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 dun.
Before we close this edition of the Laughing Place podcast, we're going to do something we've only done 50 times before. We're going to go around the table and get a final word from each of our podcasters, and we're going to start this week with Captain John.
All right. Well, it's so far been how many years of tradition now? We've gone, this would be the third time.
There was
the third annual.
Pick the weird family out of the audience, Bella, 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 Bration, and this one.
Over the top.
Together, together.
Together, together.
Oh, don't.
Together, forever.
What are you talking about, Captain?
We went to the Ringling Brothers Circus.
No.
Don't forget.
Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah, the important part.
I stayed home and enjoyed the quiet.
The greatest show on earth is what we saw. Do you think it met the expectations of the other 2 years?
Better than Little Mermaid.
Fanboy made a great point. If this is the greatest show on earth, we can just start saving our money. We need not see any other shows because they're just simply not worth it.
So, you know, the Ball of Death, I think, was the highlight.
The Ball of Death was not only the highlight, the Ball of Death was the light.
The longest part of the show.
Yeah, well, because they crashed.
Yeah, because they crashed.
at the beginning of the Ball of Death when they put 7 motorcycles in. What is this thing called? It's not even called the Ball of Death.
Steel Dome.
No, it was the Ball of Steel is what it was in the show. But everybody knows it's the Ball of Death, so it's the Ball of Death.
Or actually the Wheel of Death is what a lot of people... Wait, but it's not a wheel, it's a ball.
The partner statue.
The Sphere of Death. As soon as they get in, they put 7 in there, and before they even get started, one of them crashes, and they have to replace the motorcycle, but then they got it going.
Yeah, he was okay. I mean, he just sort of accelerated a bit wrong, and he kind of tipped over. So, I mean, I can imagine that being kind of cramped with 7 people in this little cage. But
was it better than Bellibration?
Better than Bellibration? Yeah, I think it was better than Bellibration.
How would you rate this? We've seen 3. What's your favorite, and 2nd and 3rd?
My favorite was the first one, but that really may just have been because, hey, I'm at the circus.
Yeah.
Because I really don't remember the show at all, except for we were in the front row, and I remember how it smelled.
I think you'll...
Team Spirit?
I wish.
I think your wallet will be remembering the concessions from the circus.
$9 for a lemonade, $12 for cotton candy, although I got the collectible hat.
But the memories?
The memories priceless.
The quiet...
No, about $23.
The quiet...
Can you hear me now?
The quiet... At home, priceless.
Did you miss us, hon?
No. Hey, by the way, I heard you guys decided to take the scenic route home.
That's a story.
Downtown Orlando has like a club district. I had no idea. Did you know this?
Yeah.
Somewhere around Church Street, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, and this all leads up after getting lost in downtown Orlando, trying to get back onto the freeway, that we come to the railroad crossing just as the longest train in history comes by.
It must have been carrying the circus. It was so long. Wouldn't that have been ironic? We see, like, the elephants going by.
Casey Jr.
And then we would yell, "Can you hear me now?"
That was the best line in the circus, so... Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Circus.
Part of Feld, the magic.
Part of Feld, which is Orlando, or at least the Central Florida company. So we...
Or Tampa, as the case may be.
Central Florida company. So we highly recommend you all go out there and see it. Or not, really. You're not going to miss anything.
However, I'm not taking you next year.
All that said, I cannot wait for next year's circus. It's the highlight of the year. I think the circus, followed by the semi-annual Daylight Savings Time parties... We live quite an exciting life, don't we?
Yeah. Well, this year we need to finally remember to start honoring Avogadro.
Yeah. 6:02 on October 23rd, we're having a party. Twice.
Woohoo! We should have a cake. See how many, and then we'll figure out how many atoms are in the cake.
We should put like a mole's worth of candles on the cake.
Oh, dude.
We better start buying now.
Start investing in candle companies, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, Rebecca, how about you?
Does anybody get you know who will get this? Magnet.
Speaking of Magnet, that would be what I was going to talk about today, and that is there is some, what's the word? A silver lining. No, there is a silver lining to this dark cloud that is the writer's strike.
Mole?
Yes, the return of Mole. Unfortunately, it's not the return of Celebrity Mole, especially featuring Stephen Baldwin, which was a staple of the Mosley House. When that was on, we would watch it with Fanboy.
And tacos.
Oh, yeah, and it was part of Taco Night.
Because nothing says tacos and, like the Yucatan.
And for the finale, we made sure to have mint chocolate chip ice cream because it's green like the mole. But, it's coming back. And I remember Magnet mentioned on the boards that he was a fan of the Celebrity Mole. So, yeah.
This is just going to be, normal mole.
Just normal mole, from what I've heard.
But it's still...
And unfortunately, they're also bringing back The Bachelorette. So, the sadness continues.
You take the good, you take the bad.
You take them both, and then you have...
The good is the American Gladiators. They've done a great job bringing that one back.
Oh, I mean, yes, that's good. But what's good?
You're so waiting for Knight Rider.
Okay, I am.
Those Knight Rider ads, every single time, he just...
But that's just hope. There's a new show out right now that has had 2 episodes already that may be the best new show since Lost.
You really like it.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
I know what you're talking about. The Chronicles. It is awesome.
Come with me if you want to live.
That is an awesome TV show. And it's not like these stupid sci-fi shows they have these days that are like all cerebral and stuff that Rebecca likes. No, this is just like action and stupid for people like me.
And my favorite part is when you... when you're watching it and their time vortex opens up and you get sucked into the movie. And then next thing you know, you're inside Skynet.
And then all of a sudden, a motorcyclist jumps out into your living room.
And then falls and breaks a leg, and they yell E-stop, and we all leave.
Did that happen?
Yes, it did. So Sarah Connor was injured Universal. I guess it was it Sarah Connor. I never
I
saw the show.
Explains why Linda Hamilton.
A blonde. It was a blonde. the chick in the show there.
I prefer to be called female now.
I'm a girl. I will call them what I decide to.
I have a popcorn show just for you, Doobie.
Okay.
Terminator 2, 3D, or Terminator 3, 2D?
Oh, my head is spinning. You know, I really like Terminator 3. You haven't seen it, right?
No. My Terminator experience has been Terminator 2, 3D, and the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Whoa. Episodes. You've never seen it, Terminator?
No, because you keep saying, hey, we'll go watch them together. And I keep waiting and waiting. That and Delirious.
The next Saturday night that we're not seeing a movie, and you're free, and we don't have a family.
What happened to the family?
Come with me. We're going to start our movie. We need to see three Terminators, and we need to see Delirious. But all you boys and girls out there, don't watch Delirious. This is a grown-up movie.
In fact,
I'm a little young for it, but I saw it as a child. No, I saw it as a teenager, so it's already in my mind. But if it wasn't, I wouldn't even go there.
So you're just sharing it with me. you know, it's neat because, you know, while I haven't seen the Terminators, I mean, because when Terminator 2 3D came out, I kind of got familiar with it, you know, like Miles Bryson and all that stuff. And it was neat to see the references and that it was still part of the continuity of the movies, but it wasn't required to understand.
Yeah, they explain it well for the...
You know, because you got to have the naked people because it's Terminator, but I'm glad that they... You know, because you can only have organic stuff go through the time vortex, which makes me realize...
Oh, covered in organic. That's why they come as humans.
Right. And that's... But what I'm thinking about when you go see Terminator 2 3D and the whole audience gets sucked in, do all their clothes...
That's why that's considered the first PG-13 attraction.
Touche.
Oh, you guys are just disturbed.
Remember to self, don't see Terminator 2 3D with Doobie.
Fanboy?
But just because I'm modest.
Fanboy?
Yes, Doobie. Oh, it's my turn.
Well, you're quick.
Quick draw McCraw, that's me. Or Elk Kabong, or whatever.
Are you studying up on your Hannah Montana songs?
I am. I'm very excited.
Or just studying up on Hannah Montana?
Actually, I think I like her body double better.
Oh, that's funny.
The future Mrs. Fanboy.
Where Doug and Dave are right now, at the premiere of the Hannah Montana Best of Both Worlds Tour 3D.
I hope I still have our tickets.
Multiplex, whatever.
not probably going for $1 billion on eBay. I am excited and feel really old.
Yep.
Because Radio Disney Jams, Volume 10.
No
way.
Is coming soon to a Walmart near you.
Wow.
And.
Jams 10?
I know.
Wow.
You realize that Radio Disney is coming up on 10 years?
Wow.
It's been rusting.
No, it's more than 10 years.
Yeah.
It's already been 10 years. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because they're totally 10.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, dude, I'm old.
I agree.
You realize that Radio Disney is older than Animal Kingdom?
Wow.
It's not a zoo either. Well, now that Mark and Zippy are gone.
So has Radio Disney changed greatly? It really has.
Yes,
I mean,
it has.
It has in some ways and not in others. I can tell you one way it hasn't changed.
Contest? Yoda?
Yoda. You know Hamsterdam's is still on their top 30?
The unbelievable slowness at which songs disappear out of their top 40 list.
Do they ever?
It's shocking to me.
Isn't their top 40 list now like 100 just because nothing ever drops out?
You don't listen for a while, then you come back and you know all the songs.
You know,
they've
been to the year 3000.
Yeah. I think Hanson are actually off the list now.
But Yoda isn't.
And the saga begins.
Yoda's
probably still there.
Whoa. Yoda isn't on the list anymore?
No, Yoda doesn't get played as much anymore.
How about...
What about the saga begins? That's got to still be there.
I haven't listened long enough to know. I just know that whenever I listen right now, it's the Jonas Boys.
And the Crazy Frog, I bet, is probably still on there.
Hamsterdams, I know I've heard on there.
That's Hamsterdams.
I know.
Crazy Frog is the Axel F.
The Crazy Frog. Yeah.
Do they still play? Do they still play that?
Cha-cha slide.
That
oh
yeah.
Oh, of course.
And
Anything more to say about that, fanboy?
No, I just now I just need to go buy the CD.
Yeah, I wonder what's on it. I have to go check.
Let me guess. A Miley Cyrus song, a Jonas Brothers song.
Oh, really? Wow.
A Corbin Blue song.
Anything by Ashley Tisdale, maybe? Vanessa, maybe?
The one about the nose. Vanessa, let's hope.
All right.
Vanessa will be on there.
This morning.
Oh, maybe not.
This morning I had the distinct pleasure of going to Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Aww.
The newest theme park here at the Walt Disney World Resort.
How exciting.
It was exciting because I went to just do a little shopping, but got there early.
Mm-hmm.
At park open. I actually got to see the park open there. It was kind of neat.
The adventure begins.
Isn't it cool?
It's small but cool.
What's not cool is
people are just wondering why everyone has stopped watching the show instead of going to the rides because they don't realize the park's not open yet.
Right.
But, you know, what can you do about that? It's still worth it.
It's cool. I like it.
I did notice they had some piped in sound there.
Really?
Everyone got your sunscreen? Yeah. And you hear people just going, yay! But there's like 10 people there.
It's like alien encounter.
That's always fun.
There's no one sitting over there screaming.
That's my mother-in-law. I want to be a pirate. So
I want to be a pirate. Nope. Continue.
So got to ride Expedition Everest.
Wow.
I think I actually was on the first train going out. It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
I was in the last row. Don't know what that means.
Oh, did you do the Yeti trick?
I was a little scared because I don't think I've ridden it since it officially opened it. I think I last rode it on the press night before the day before it opened.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm in better health, I'm also older. And so I was a little bit nervous on there. And when it was in the helix, I closed my eyes because I didn't want to get dizzy. But it was cool.
Wait. You're in a black, dark tunnel, and you close your eyes to prevent you from getting dizzy?
Better safe than sorry, buddy.
All you have to do is look through the floor, which doesn't exist, and then you can actually focus on
something. I think that might explain your problem with Mission Space.
You look to the side, don't you?
No, I don't.
He closes his eyes.
No, I don't. Anyway. That was a lot of fun. I was dizzy when I got off it, as I always am. But, you know, stand still for a few minutes, and I'm okay. Good coaster. Honestly, not as good as I remember.
Wow.
Further confirms my feeling that the best ride of any Disney coaster that I've been on is California Screamin'. A much better ride than Expedition Everest. So, and then I went over to, let me think, maybe my fourth or fifth favorite Disney coaster, Primeval World.
Did you ride that?
I rode Primeval World this morning.
Did you stand up before exiting?
The funny part was...
Does it work as an omni-mover to load there?
It's not an omni-mover. It's a continuous loader. There's no ramp that you just have to sort of jump in.
Okay.
Actually, I noticed that. That's kind of weird loading there. It seems a little scary. Honestly, it's like, this is not as simple as an omni-mover, yet this thing's not stopping for me, and that's a bit scary. The funniest part was I got a Flick card. Even though there was not a soul in line in front of me from when I got the card to when I got on the ride.
Everybody know what a Flick card is?
What is a Flick card, fanboy?
It's a red card that's some weight that measures how long the wait is. And regardless of how long the wait actually is, it could not have changed. It could be zero. To get the thing to stop beeping, the greeter cast members have to hand out the card.
That was very funny. Seriously, not a soul between me when I got it and then up two ramps, get on the car. Not a soul, but I've got the Flick card.
No,
not
the soul.
So, I've ridden it twice before. Didn't really remember how it goes. So you go up, you go spin, it's all fun, ha ha ha. And then I get to the second group of switchbacks when the thing decides to get on steroids and spin like crazy. And that was actually a lot more terrifying than Expedition Everest. And I did close my eyes, and occasionally I opened them. Don't look at me like that, Captain. It worked. I wasn't dizzy when I got off. And then you have to walk the length of an Indy queue to get out of there once you get off the attraction.
Well, you didn't mention the braking system, though.
I like when you come to a stop, and then the thing kind of lifts up like you're about to fly over. That was kind of fun. And then, after that harrowing experience, the cast member says to me, "Would you like to go again?" I'm like, "No. Let me off." Then I got to stand before exiting. Anyway, that was my morning. I bet yours was
much fun. I wish I'd have
known
that you were going to Animal Kingdom. I might have snuck over to Yak and Yeti while you were there.
It wasn't open.
Oh, okay. Just as well, then.
It was early.
But you brought me back something very cool.
I did. What was it?
The tea bag holder.
Oh, yeah. I brought you something. There's a new Alice in Wonderland tea set out that's really nice.
Yeah, it's very sweet. They have a teapot, cup with saucer. They also just have a simple mug. They have a tea bag holder. And they have a tea for two set, which is the teapot sits inside the little teacup. That's very sweet. It features Alice, the March Hare, and the Cheshire Cat, and I think the Mad Hatter, but I can't remember for sure.
You know what happens when you drink out of it, though? Get really, really big.
Okay.
Or you get really, really small.
And they have a little bread and butterfly on it, too, which are one of my favorite Disney things.
No, the second mention of bread and butterfly
on the show. I love the
bread
and butterflies. They're my favorite things, followed by the rocking horse flies.
Rocking horse flies? Is that Alice in Wonderland, too? Mm-hmm.
And with that, we will close the January 18th edition of the LPP.
Yeah, you know me.
As always, don't forget you can reach us at podcast@lifeplace.com. You can reach us at 866-718-9408. You can reach us by posting on the lifeplace.com discussion boards. You can reach us by knocking on our door here at our lovely apartment and saying hello. You can reach us by stopping us at a theme park and you know, asking a question. You can reach us by calling us personally on our cell phone if you have our number.
You could reach us in a train. You could reach us on a plane.
Miss Cleo, talking about Cleo. You can reach us through her.
Yeah.
That costs a lot, though. Don't stay on too long.
If you're dead, you can reach us all kinds of bizarre and spooky ways. But I suggest you just write us a podcast left and
or send us a telegraph. That'd be cool.
Telegram.
To all who come to this happy place, goodbye.